Welcome to Day Zero Update for May 4th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, it's been a big week of news.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just say lots of bad news this week.
Mm-hmm.
In various ways, a number of layoffs, a number of media sites, games media sites, kind of suffering massive layoffs or restructuring in major ways. Changing the landscape of games media.
Yep.
As well as, you know, a number of games getting delayed, including one of the biggest ones people were expecting to be out this year. As well as some things coming out in the near future and such. So,
yep.
We'll get to all of that. Before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. Been playing a new Playdate game called Overseer, which is a very cool little game. It's free on Itch. The developers made it available on Itch. I was surprised it wasn't like a pay what you want kind of thing, because I think a number of people have played it and been like, I'd have totally thrown a few bucks their way if I had the option of doing that. But yeah, it is a Metroid-y game. The big catch is that you start off as this like deer spirit, but then you eventually sort of run into this boss, and I'll include a link here for people to check it out. You run into this boss, the first big boss you face, which is kind of a pretty simple kind of boss where there's this like elevated patch of land that drops onto the ground, and as long as you're not under it, you can jump on it and jump away as the boss is kind of rushing towards you. And you're just basically trying to avoid it. It runs into a wall of spikes, damages itself. But the different thing is this game seems to be built towards being a very challenging game. And so like that boss fight, you probably have to do this a good like 25 times, I think. Overall, it's not like do it twice, it goes into another phase, do it twice more, another phase. It kind of takes like 8 times to get past the first phase, and then like another 8 before you start really getting going. And then once you defeat it, it's the ground gets broken by this other creature that you see kind of lurking in the background, and the boss creature dies, and you kind of ingest it or something like that. You kind of like absorb its spirit, essentially, and that then gives you more of a human form, sort of like a fox lady form, that then can attack enemies, as well as do like a dodge jump kind of thing. That works out pretty well. It kind of, they built a lot of jumps with that in mind, with that kind of gap in mind. And I eventually got to a second boss fight that I took out, which similarly had like kind of 3 phases of sorts. And then from there, got an ability that lets me get through these specific walls that I've been seeing blocking passages. And that kind of is a big progression thing. I think the last thing is going to be either some kind of double jump or something. I'm not sure. There could be others as well, because when you go to the inventory screen, there's like spots for probably 6 upgrades, I think. But I've only gotten through 2 bosses so far. And I've gone through like a tough challenge area where it's like half platforming challenges, half either avoiding enemies or taking out enemies kind of stuff. And that's pretty much one of those areas that kind of circles around itself to the save point that starts it. So you're kind of able to see the pathway that you're going and kind of in a very Souls way progress past a thing that's a big challenge to you, and then see like the next big challenge. Probably die on it and then learn how to get past it kind of thing. It's a lot of that kind of vibe of it, but you don't have any XP or anything really. You do have health upgrades you get. I think it's two of those per part that you get.
Yeah.
And so that kind of helps you survive a bit longer and take more damage from things, which is like if you hit an enemy or an obstacle like a spike or something, you'll take a full heart. If you just drop into a gap that will kill you or, mm-hmm. you know, will reset you, it's half a heart. So it right. can get pretty frustrating at sometimes where it's like doing the first part of this phase and it's like I just do something dumb and fall into the gap. And it's like, oh, I better just run back to the save point, just reset my health kind of thing. But yeah, it's one of those kind of games where you're swapping back and forth. Though now my original Fox Spirit form has some abilities, has an extra ability now that is pretty useful. So yeah, it's one of those games. It's very fun, especially for a free game. This developer, I think they're called Stoff, STOFF.
Mm-hmm.
Has been promoting this, and it's got some nice music to it, like in a way that play date games generally don't have. A lot of like music has like a menu screen when you start it up. A lot of games just either go into it or you have a lot of like arcadey style options. But this has, you know, menus, options, inventory screens. It's got a whole map thing that you unlock eventually for that. And they even give you like a cool little manual that's kind of a GBA style manual. Doesn't really tell you too much. That just gives you a little bit of basics for it, but that's like a nice little added touch to it. So yeah, that's Overseer. Been one of the nice surprises out of the playdates recently.
Yeah.
Though they just put out a system update that essentially is adding networking support so that devs can start building in things like online multiplayer into it, which is a nice surprise for a device that is, you know, was originally designed to be pretty simple in what it's going to offer. So that's a nice surprise to see. And people have made some quick stuff of like, here's like a weather app kind of thing. So you can use it in that way. So yeah, that's Overseer. Very fun. They do mention like if you don't have a play date and still kind of want to check out the game, the SDK has a like simulator app in it for checking, you know, playing it locally without having it on the device itself. Though I've been using the Mirror app, which is for, you know, capturing or whatever. You can play it on your PC with the Playdate as your controller kind of thing. That's been how I've been playing it. So that's been fun to check out. Let's see. Also been playing some Peglin, playing some more of that. I've had a successful run, which wasn't too hard. It was my second run, was my successful one, beating the it's like a three-tier roguelite campaign kind of thing. To it, and that's where it starts opening up the difficulty thing, which I forget what they call it, but it essentially starts adding, you know, difficulty modifiers. It seems like it'll add various tiers of that to it. But yeah, that's been fun. Still trying to unlock these side things, and but they require a good bit of challenge. Like, you need to get 100 Bulwark, which is their shield, essentially, or inflict, like, I forget if it's like 25 or 40 Spinfection, which is their poison equivalent, in one battle. So it's like, oh, that's a lot. You got to really build for that. So that's probably something you acquire later in a run. But yeah, that's been a challenge trying to learn those various terms, even though it does kind of the collectible card game kind of thing of like, popping up a little thing to tell you a little bit more about terms that are unusual kind of stuff. But it still doesn't necessarily explain it super well. So
yeah,
it's kind of one of those things you just kind of mess around with and you learn more about it. So I've been doing that, and it loves to throw in really fucked up puzzle boards or peg boards.
Yeah.
Like imagine one where all the pegs are flying around like a flock of birds, just random. And it's like, oh, how the fuck am I supposed to aim for, you know, the crit pegs or anything in this mess? And something where the pegs are moving vertically. That's like, oh, there's a bunch of chaos here and all that. So yeah, it's got some good stuff going on to it. It's maybe not my favorite one in this kind of sub genre of Peggle roguelite games, but it's still pretty good from what I've played so far.
Mm-hmm.
And the other game I'm playing is MLB The Show 25, still kind of playing that, especially the Diamond Dynasty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of getting to more of the things that I should have been doing, which is like going through the conquest mode, which is their little like turn-based strategy mode, doing little quick like three inning games of baseball versus just trying to do full nine inning games.
Right.
Which is useful when you just need to get like a bunch of hits or something like that out of certain players. Whatever it's needed for, but this has been good for getting some of the, you know, stats that you just need, like saves and such, which can be hard when you're playing CPUs on easier difficulties and just either crushing them or getting stymied.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's been fun, but that's pretty much what I've been playing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I am still more or less still playing 100 Line Last Defense Academy. I'll more or less repeat what I said for what we were doing last weekend. One of the things about this game that continues to impress me is not only just the sheer rabbit hole that this game goes through, but also how like the overall genre of the game can like change on like a whim. Depending on like what decisions you end up making during the course of the game. There's a course where it'll turn into like a dating sim more or less for a while. There are times when the choices you do will end up going to what's called the slasher route, where there's this guy in this like weird like diving suit with like a rotary saw that starts attacking people. And depending on how your choices go with that one, it can then sort of turn into like a zombie apocalypse type thing as well. There's parts where it's also like a send up on like the harem genre, except it gets that, you know, plays it for comedy for a little while until about the midpoint when it gets really super duper dark. And I really want to emphasize one thing about this game. This game is M for mature, and there is a reason for it. This game gets really, really, really dark at times. And yeah, it's just, it amazes me like how, like, you know, just all the ways that this game's story can go, but also just how well developed all these characters are. For the most part, there is like one character who has basically this one joke pertaining to her that the game basically just runs into the ground, and it's like, okay, I get the point. You don't have to keep going on it. Like, it was funny the first few times, but now it's just kind of getting annoying. But other than that, yeah, like, these are a fascinating group of people that you've managed to find yourself with, and damn, if it isn't just incredibly enjoyable. But on top of that, because this was the game that, you know, and I brought this up last week when the subject of its sales came up and we were talking about it. It was Clair Obscur Expedition 33, and I basically said everything about this game that I have been hearing and reading is like, I have got to play this game and I've got to play it now. Well, I'm playing it now. Clair Obscur Expedition 33, and there's a bunch of stuff about this game right off the bat that I love. I love the fact that it doesn't like take a long time to get going. It actually moves at a very good pace, and it doesn't have like a slow start that a lot of RPGs do. Especially games that are either Japanese RPGs or like this game, heavily inspired by them. The basic plot is you are living on this island called Lumiere, which was originally part of like either like another, you know, landmass or a continent or whatever, until this thing called the Fracture happened. And if you look around, like, it's very obvious that even before they bring it up, something happened, because not only is like the whole city basically broken off and like now out in the middle of the ocean, like there's just random stuff that's like floating out in the air. Like the very fabric of reality itself has been ripped asunder. And then you go through sort of the beginning of the game, which is essentially the game's tutorial, and it does a really good clip of telling you like what the basic premise of this game is. Basically, there is this entity that they call the Paintress. They don't really have a name for her or anything like that. They just call her the Paintress, who for the last 67 some odd years has appeared and painted this number on the side of this enormous gigantic pillar that can basically be seen at like any distance in this world. That number essentially determines how many years a person in this world can live before they basically disappear or disintegrate or whatever. They turn into like a burst of like ashes and flower petals when the year happens. And every year, the number gets smaller and smaller. By the time the game starts, the number has been reduced from 34 to 33. And there's like this huge ceremony that happens called the Gomange, where all the people who are getting ready to disappear essentially have like this big festival that happens. They have like a whole thing where they're saying goodbye to their loved ones and everything. And then they go down to the harbor and they watch the Paintress paint the new number, and then they all just disappear. But like the game calls itself, there's also another thing that's going on, which is the expedition, which is basically this group of volunteers who... Typically what happens is they take, they're like a year or two close to when their own personal Go Mage is going to happen, and they decide to spend it going out to sea, going out to the other side of the world, trying to go to where the Paintress is, and essentially try and get any information and, if possible, kill or stop the Paintress. And since this is the 33rd of these, as you can probably guess, they have not succeeded up to this point. And in fact, when the boat that you're on makes landfall, you're pretty much all of your fellow expeditioners are just straight up slaughtered. There's only you and a couple of others that have actually survived to make it. And that's basically the plot of the game, more or less. It is very melancholy, like right off the bat. Even the colors of this game are very melancholy, because it always looks like it's in like permanent sunset, or like permanent twilight. It's really somber. And it is also very, very, very French. This game was made by a bunch of former people who used to work for Ubisoft, and it definitely shows in just how incredibly melodramatic it is. And also, you know, the random French words that get thrown around every so often. But as far, like, that's basically the game's story. The gameplay is actually incredibly satisfying and also really fascinating, because they basically went back to like all the major JRPGs that have come out over the last like some 30 years and have essentially just taken a grab bag of influences for the combat and honestly made one of the best RPG combat systems I've seen in a long time. What it does is it takes inspiration from a bunch of different games. First and foremost, one of the biggest inspirations it comes from, literally, believe it or not, is Super Mario RPG. All of the actions that you take in the game, instead of like being on like a list, like a lot of JRPGs, instead each particular action is tethered to a button press. So you'll press one button for attack, another one for skill, another one for defend. You know that. On top of that, it also has a huge like rhythm aspect to it as well. Anybody who's played Super Mario RPG remembers how there was like an ability to defend defend against attacks to lessen the damage that was going to hit you. That's very much the case in this game as well. Although they also add in like a parry system as well. Since a lot of attacks hit more than once, if you can successfully parry all of those attacks, you can then do a counterattack that can take off a huge chunk of an enemy's health if you do it successfully. So that's like the first big one. They also have another big inspiration, which is from a somewhat obscure but honestly really good RPG from the OG Xbox era, which was Lost Odyssey. Which was a Mistwalker joint. And one of the big things about that game's battle system was its sort of QTE-type system that it had for getting your attacks more powerful and effective. And when it comes to like using like skills and stuff in this game, all of the skills are essentially more or less operate using a type of QTE button press system. Now, technically, you can actually set it in the game so that the QTEs just kind of happen automatically, so you don't necessarily have to press them in time. But that's just one of the sort of accessibility options you can get. And last but not least, they also take inspiration from Persona 5 in that you've got a projectile weapon that you can use. It can be a pistol, it can be like magic shots, stuff like that. And in this case, it's actually important because a lot of these enemies that you'll come in contact with, they have weak spots on them, that if you hit them with the projectile attack, it'll not only take off a huge amount of health off of them, it'll also disable like any kind of shields or armor that they have. And in fact, there are some enemies you'll come in contact with who cannot be attacked using normal attacks. You literally have to use your projectile attack to do any kind of damage on them. And I'm not even that far in the game yet. There's still some stuff that's probably still going to be introduced. And the funny thing, and the thing is, this game really has been doing incredibly well, especially when like physical copies are concerned, because I had to download this. I couldn't like get a physical copy of it because all the places in town that had physical copies of it were sold out. So like the game is pretty much the sleeper hit of the year. And so far it is definitely going to be on my game of the year list by the time we get to December. So yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right. So yeah, let's get to the news.
Mm-hmm.
And first up, it is a new month, so we have new PlayStation Plus Essential games.
Yep.
And they got a pretty good list here. First up for PS5, Ark Survival Ascended.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have the free space on your PS5, you can try that out.
Yep.
And see what's going on in that series, or that game, as they continue to just add more and more content to it. Though, from what I've heard, some of the most recent, they're using AI for the trailers, and it shows how shitty they look.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. I believe they had one that recently was about underwater stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they just use AI for that, and it just looks rough. And the community's not happy. So yeah, there you go. That's one to check out if you need a new survival game to check out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. For PS5 and PS4, there's Balatro.
Yep.
An excellent game.
Yeah.
I do not have this on consoles, so I'll probably check this out. At least I've played enough of it on PC that I know that I can cut through the chaff, the early chaff of fucking around. a ton, figuring out how things work together. But that gets annoying because then you see like, oh, there's here's stuff that I haven't used. And it's like, yeah, I don't use it because it's not very good for at least what I try to do. But you also still want to get those because it's still useful to at least try it out. But yeah, that's a very good game if you like your, let's say, poker, but fucked up.
Yeah. Or if you've ever felt the desire to play like a video poker machine, but actually walk away from it feeling like you actually accomplished something and then just get completely ripped off.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. That's one to check out. And also for PS5 and PS4, Warhammer 40,000 Bolt Gun, which is basically what if you made a Doom-like in the Warhammer 40,000 universe.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it worked out very well.
Yep.
When I read on this thing. So that's what I'm looking forward to checking out as well. So yeah, that's your lineup. Pretty solid lineup for this month. For that. So yeah, that'll be available on the 6th, I believe. So be able to check those three games out.
Okay.
You got any checking out, Brandon, on there?
Definitely. I mean, I'm definitely going to get Balatro on there. And if my if my system can handle it, I'll probably give Ark a try.
Yeah. I wonder how big that version is.
I will probably do a little clearing on my memory just in case.
Let's see. Yeah, I'm trying to see here. Yeah, that's not going to, these are Steam things. No. This random, Reddit post suggests it could be up to like 140 gigs.
Mm-hmm.
This was 7 months ago.
Mm.
Maybe it's more.
Yeah.
But yeah. That'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Next up here, Nintendo Switch got a big update. The one that adds the virtual game cards.
Yep.
As well as, I think, a couple other things. It basically adds two new icons to that little bottom row on the homepage for the virtual game cards and for the game share stuff. So you can start checking that out. This is also the thing when I was looking at it. I don't really have any use for it personally, but I was just looking around at it. And it seems neat, but it seems like the big catch of this whole thing is that people that have been able to essentially game share their titles and play online with each other with the same copy of the game on two separate Switches, now that is no longer a thing. You can do that if it's local co-op. It does not require the online access, but only one copy can go online at a time. So that seems like the big change there. But yeah, if you have people in your household or, you know, friends or whatever that are able to get together, at least you have to have the two Switches locally close to each other to link up for sharing games through the virtual game cards. From there, you can lend them out for, I think, 2 weeks at a time. So that's a pretty decent idea for how to do this, especially for the way that they're expecting things to go, which is, you know, somebody gets the Switch 2 and hands the Switch off to, you know, a younger sibling or family member or somebody and says, like, oh, hey, I can help you out with save a little money on games, lend you out some of the stuff I'm not playing, whatever it may be for that. But, one of the things I noticed is that I looked, the list has, like, different ways of sorting it, and I was looking at alphabetically and got down to the L's and looked at Luigi's Mansion 3 is sorted alphabetically higher than Luigi's Mansion 2 HD.
Mm-hmm.
And that's evil, Nintendo.
Yeah.
2 goes before 3, even if there's an HD after it.
Mm-hmm.
So Nintendo is the devil. It's basically what I'm saying. They have broken the cardinal rule of alphabeticals.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Switch 2 is ruined. It's a dead platform now. All right.
Yep.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
That update's out now. There was a small chance of bricking systems, but they have put out a following update to fix that issue.
Mm-hmm.
So people that have that issue can put it into maintenance mode and get the update through there. And should be okay now. So mm-hmm. there you go.
Right.
There's no themes or anything, but now you got a bunch of icons and you'll have to fumble around, remember which one's which.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish you could just say like, hey, I'm not going to use this stuff. I'll just take it off here. Sort of like the way that you can on the PS5's home screen menu thing where mm-hmm. you can take off those icons at the bottom when you hit the PlayStation button.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing, that would be nice. But Nintendo's not doing that right now, or
mm-hmm.
ever, really. They don't really allow much customization on the Switch. I said that'll continue with the Switch too, so there you go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's Sony and Nintendo news. Now we get to the Xbox news, which is arguably the worst of all three right now. Microsoft announced a series of price increases for its consoles, accessories, and upcoming games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the consoles going up a significant amount. These are just U.S. prices, but it's happening in all their territories, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to check those out. For the Series S, the basic 512 gigabit one mm-hmm. is going up from $300 to $379. The 1 terabyte's going from $349 to $429.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it starts getting wild. The Series X Digital without the disk drive is going up from $449 to $549. And the Series X base version is going up from $499 to $599. And then the 2 terabyte Galaxy Black Special Edition going up from $600 to $729. And that's more than the price of the PS5 Pro. Right there. The controllers are going up, I think, $5 here. $60 to $65 for the core basic controller colors. That gets black and white. Special colors going up from $65 to $70. The special edition's going up to $79.99. The limited edition controllers to $89.99. The Elite Series 2 controller core version is going up to $149. I think it's $120 to $149. The full Elite Series 2 controller going up to $200. The stereo headset going up to $65. The wireless headset to $120. And then kind of cap that off saying that certain upcoming first-party games will retail at $79.99 beginning this holiday season here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Which will follow up. Mario Kart World is the first major release, is at $80. It'll apply to the physical and digital editions for those games.
Mm-hmm.
But existing games will not be getting a price increase for this, so that's at least good news. That'd be ridiculous to increase the game prices
mm-hmm.
afterwards. Yeah, and they say here, we understand these changes are challenging. They were made with careful consideration given the market conditions and the rising cost of development. Looking ahead, we continue to focus on offering more ways to play more games across any screen, ensuring value for Xbox players,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of part of their streaming stuff they're doing to TVs and whatnot. But yeah, this isn't a huge surprise. The tariff stuff is going to be going back into effect here in the near future, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure exact dates on that because it just changes all the damn time. Yeah, I said a while ago that as the supply of Xboxes and PlayStations starts dwindling and they have to look at bringing new units in, they would have to start increasing the prices on these things, and Microsoft is the first one to have to do that. Sony will probably be doing it at some point this summer here. But yeah, kind of wild to see these prices going up this much, but they are definitely not reflecting the full potential prices of these tariffs, but they're increasing them in all the regions. and such to kind of even out those potential costs, which is, you know, obviously going to lead to even less sales for the Xbox consoles as they continue to not do well on that front. Kind of the unfortunate side effect of all these tariffs is that they're kind of ruining a lot of chances for Microsoft to even get back into the picture here and kind of just hurrying up their the demise of their hardware division at the moment. So yeah, not great news. And certainly those prices went up into effect right away. So it's not like a delayed thing to get you the ability to buy stuff really quickly if you wanted. The only real positive side of this is that it should mean trade-in offers for like GameStop and whatever should go up for that, because they're able to sell these things for more. So they theoretically should give you a bit more, which I think they had some ridiculous trade-in offers recently where you could trade in a Series X for like $400 or $440, where it's like, it's a $500 console you could have bought in 2020 and sell it for only, you know, $60 or $80 less 5 years later. And it's like, that's never really been a thing. Trade-in-wise. Often these things get cheaper, and that just hasn't happened. And especially as the inflation and the global economy, especially as Trump fucks with it constantly, has made it much harder for any of this stuff to really get cheaper. And has created this whole shitty situation. So yeah, I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
Not particularly. More that I just kind of saw this coming.
Yeah,
and this was kind of, I mean, we talk about the tariffs and everything, but in hindsight, I mean, the industry had been kind of secretly pushing for these price increases long before those tariffs were even announced. So it's more of a self-fulfilling prophecy than anything.
Yeah. It's kind of surprising. It's not surprising. It'll be, I'm sure people will get nuts when Sony increases. Because, you know, people see, you know, a reasonable reaction is like, these prices are not supposed to be going up. This is crazy to be happening, but it's also just the times we're in right now.
Yeah.
None of these companies are going to take massive losses the way that Microsoft is essentially pushing onto them. You know, especially making these things in the US is not going to be as cost effective as any of these companies want to pay for. Especially when it would take, you know, at least a few years to get the factories built and up and running, or for any of this to go into effect. And by that point, you'll be looking at potentially new hardware with a, you know, PS6 and another Xbox or something like that. So yeah, just unfortunate, but not surprising at all. It'll be interesting to see what game they pick as their first $80 game. Could be a new Gears, or I'm not sure what else they might have in the line for this year that would be worth that kind of increase. But Gears would certainly potentially be one of those, because it the first Gears of War was the first $60 game for the Xbox 360. So that would be history right there. But yeah.
Yep.
Maybe they tied on to the next Forza Horizon game.
Eh, we'll see.
That'd be a very casual kind of game, but I would feel like that would make it more likely for people to just say, like, what if I buy 5? Maybe they'll delist it before they announce that and just get rid of the game. Like, oh, you got no options anymore. So yeah. That'll be interesting to see there. But yeah, let's see what else is here. We got some dates coming up, some games coming out in the near future. First up here, we got Little Kitty Big City coming to PlayStation, PS5, PS4 on May 9th.
Yep.
So if you've not had a chance to check out that very cute little open world cat game, that's one to check out. should be a pretty easy platinum. So it was a pretty easy 1,000 points to get on Game Pass. So that's at least one thing to check out. So yeah, mm-hmm. there you go. Let's see, for the 15th, May 15th, Shovel Knight Dig is coming to PS5, Xbox Series X and S and Xbox One.
Yep.
Alongside a new update called Wicked Wishes.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like that'll be the final update. So that is adding some new bosses, quests, secrets, and new upgrades.
Yeah.
So that's a cool little game.
Yeah.
Been on the Switch and PC for quite a while, and it seems like they've been working on this for a while. I saw somebody pull up a post on the PlayStation blog. They announced this for the PS4 before the PS5 was announced, and that was like 2019, something like that, and that never happened. So it seems like they finally got a version of this game ready for launch on more platforms, and just happened to take a handful of years later. So there you go. That's a cool game to check out.
Yep.
Because yeah, this is the like digging roguelite game, essentially. It's not the puzzle game. I'm blanking on that one. I forget what the... No, wait, let me see. Just look at the gameplay here. Nope, they don't show it.
Nope.
This is just, here's the dates. It's like, oh, great, trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just look at the Steam page then. Yeah, this is the kind of side-scrolling, digging platformer kind of thing, where you're actually digging with the shovel.
Yep.
Versus there's a puzzle game that they also have out. That's Pocket Dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very cool game as well. So yeah, this one's worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's see, the week after that, Sea of Stars. First free DLC, Throes of the Watchmaker, will be out May 20th.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have that game, you can grab that DLC and check it out. They say it'll add over 8 hours of new areas, music, dungeons, minigames, enemies, bosses, and puzzles, including new classes for Valor, Valier, and Sale, and a new playable character, Artie. So a nice new chunk of the game to check out. So yeah, that's cool. More of that. I probably need to buy that at some point because I played a bunch of it on PlayStation Plus and just never finished it. So I need to get it on sale at some point and check out this new content too. So there you go. Also on that same day, May 20th, TMNT Splintered Fate will be coming to PlayStation, PS5 and PS4. And I believe Xbox will be June 24th on Xbox Series X and S and Xbox One. That is the very roguelite action game set in the TMNT universe that was on Apple Arcade initially, then came to Switch and PC, and now has sort of evolved a bit and seems to be a pretty good game. So looking forward to this. I believe it's also getting a physical edition on August 26th on all the platforms, or all the consoles. So if you want that, that'll be a little bit longer of a wait. But they also have a special edition as well, collector's edition with a bunch of extra stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Cards, looks like some, yeah, like D&D dice. The green ones, essentially, with numbers on them.
Mm-hmm.
With a little box, looks like a manhole cover.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. The collector's edition box is a big pizza box, so they're doing all the specialist crap that you would want in this kind of thing. So that's cool. So yeah, that's out pretty soon. And then yeah, let's see, we got Wuchang Fallen Feathers will be out July 24th.
Yep.
On PS5, Xbox, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be $50, it looks like.
Yep.
So yeah, that's the one of the, I think, from one of the Chinese developers.
Oh yeah,
Lean Z Games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Souls-like action RPG.
Yep. Because that's basically what everyone's making now.
Yeah, I've seen people describe Clair Obscura as a Souls-like, and I'm like, it's not really. It's just that you have the ability to parry as well as
yeah
that little dodge block move, and it's like,
yeah,
it's like, what if you just made, you know, it's kind of a Mario RPG kind of style system, but
yeah,
what if you also had the parry in it as well?
Yeah, that you're right. It's I mean, people call it talk, you know, refer to what they associate it with, but you know, there were RPGs that were doing that long before Demon Souls was produced, so
yeah. It's just like, this is just a weird place to see that kind of move in. But also you don't have to do it.
Well, it's also that and just overall the like really dark and dreary world building.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a game you can check out this summer. Let's see, and our last date here is Borderlands 4. It was supposed to be out September 23rd, but now it's coming out September 12th.
Yep.
People were like, oh, is that because GTA 6 is going to be there? And Randy Pitchford was out there and was like, look, if we knew when it was coming, we still wouldn't make this decision based on that. We just feel good about where we're at and we'll be ready earlier than anticipated. Which is like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I don't think you would move it that much just because GTA was going to be coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they would know. So even though they're also owned by 2K, they're not necessarily in the business of being involved in 2K's affairs on managing any of that stuff, which is funny based on the other news we got. But they also had a state of play this week, showed off a good chunk of what they've done to improve on this game and all that over the over what we've played over the last 16 years it's been since the first one. Yeah, they showed off two of the new characters. Yeah, there's a siren named, I'm not sure if they have the names in here. I think they do. But I forget what her name is. She has some cool stuff. She has like a ghost creature to bring in to do some attacks. Vex the Siren. Yeah. And Rafa the Exo Soldier. Wears an experimental exosuit capable of destructing an arsenal of weapons. So you can kind of switch around, I guess, pretty quickly. The neat things they're doing, the like specialized like rocket launcher type weapons are like the third thing that you can equip, or like an extra weapon that you can equip at any point. It doesn't take a place of any of your, I assume it's still the base four weapons you equip and swap between. It's like an additional thing that you can pull out whenever, so you don't necessarily have to use one of those slots on one of the big weapons just for that. That kind of adds an easier way to use that stuff pretty regularly when you need it, instead of having to carry it around. It's like, well, I'm hoping there's a boss or something like that that I can take down more easily with this kind of thing. And yeah, they also show off the new movement skills, double jumps and glides and all that kind of stuff that you have now to get around more easily, because Borderlands has never been great at any of that stuff. Three kind of did a bit better and allowing you to climb up on stuff, but not as much as you might want. And so this kind of adds a bit of like Destiny style platforming to the game, which seems like it fits it pretty well. And yeah, they've reworked the loot here, because from what they were saying, people were not happy that there were just tons of legendary stuff dropping in Borderlands 3. So they've kind of tightened that up a bit so that the legendary stuff's a little more special and rare, but probably not, you know, too rare or anything. But they're also adding more manufacturers of guns and making the they added three new ones. With new characteristics for their own benefits. So they also have a new licensed parts system, so you can find guns and incorporate the behaviors and abilities from multiple manufacturers into a single weapon. So you can kind of see, you know, you might like one of the brands for like one thing they do, instead of just dealing with the stuff you may not like about it. Just for that one bonus, you might find that in something you like better.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's neat. So, yeah. Yeah, they called it ordnance for the shared slot for grenades and heavy weapons, like rocket launchers. Recharges on a cooldown to keep you locked and loaded for the tough encounters without having to just kind of carry it around, swap it in and out as needed.
Mm-hmm.
Enhancements replace the artifact slot in Borderlands 3. That augments your weapons based on their manufacturer. And rep kits add utility by letting you heal yourself or activate temporary buffs to turn the tide of an intense battle.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like, all these seem like pretty solid upgrades over 3.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the writing is a notable improvement, it seemed a little bit that they showed seemed all right.
Mm.
Which is kind of where you want it to be all right. You want it to be non-intrusive. The Borderlands 3 was very much very intrusive.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you got to any of the areas where the streamers were hanging out and just throwing it in your face, all their, you know, influencer lingo that just was annoying for the mm-hmm. most part. So this looks like it's going to be a pretty good time. So that was a pretty good state of play. So check it out if you haven't. They should have links to it here. For that, so there you go. Borderlands 4 looks pretty solid.
Yep.
And so, yeah. If you got anything to add on any of these games we got here,
I mean, obviously, I am still kind of, you know, anticipating Borderlands 4 because I do love Borderlands. You know.
Yeah.
But as for like some of the other stuff. I mean, you know, it's just, I have to see. Because yeah. Borderlands 3 also looked really promising, and then the game came out, and, you know, it had its good points, but, like, towards the end, it was, like, really obvious they had just kind of run out of ideas.
Yeah.
So, and hopefully the ending will be better, because the ending for Borderlands 3 was the biggest freaking cop-out I've ever seen.
Yeah. So, yeah. I forgot one thing here. Lost Bull's Side was supposed to be out this month. That delayed to August 29th. So yeah, May 30th was the original dates. Been pushed a few months there.
Yeah.
So hopefully that works out for them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a game that looks pretty cool, and if it needs time, give it time.
Yeah, and I really want, you know, this game to succeed, just because the whole story behind of how it was created... It's like, I want it to have a happy ending, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, this is one of those stories of, like, how one guy with the, you know, it's one of the handful of stories of, like, where one guy with a dream and a little talent to back it up managed to essentially attract the attention of one of the biggest game developers in the world to basically give him carte blanche to make his dream project, like... You know, and all just because, you know, he saw a trailer for Final Fantasy 15 and he was like, that looks cool. I want to do that.
Yeah. I do hope that works out for him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was, might have been the biggest delay news of the week until later in the week when Grand Theft Auto 6 got delayed from coming out at Nebulous Point in 2025. People were assuming sometime during the holiday season.
Yep.
But then they gave it an actual date of May 26, 2026.
Yep.
So that's going to be a good summer game?
Yeah. I mean, because the summer is typically we talk about the summer drought all the time. And, them deciding to plop it in the middle of summer like that is like... Yeah, that's a pretty brilliant move on their part, because they won't have even if they were to release it in like a release heavy season, they would still make all the money in the world and more. Doing this, they will have basically no competition.
Yeah, basically anybody with the money to pay for this game,
mm-hmm.
At least the younger people will be, you know, either getting out of school for the summer or, you know, finishing their semester of college mm-hmm. for the spring around then.
Doing all their finals, getting their theses in, all that stuff, yeah.
Be able to chill for a couple of months unless they go right back in for a summer semester or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's a pretty good time to go out there, especially if they need that time, which they should try and nail it. That's would be a bad time to be like, oh, we're pulling a Cyberpunk 2077. It'd still make plenty of money, but it would be a definitely a not great thing to do. For how long they've been working on this game. So yeah, that's the whole thing. So yeah, there you go. That'll be out next year.
Yeah.
No longer will people have to be like, oh, are they putting this date here because they know when Rockstar is releasing GTA 6? Like, no, now people can just announce their dates. Put their games out there this fall without fear of Rockstar stealing all their money.
Yeah.
Just do it next year. So yeah, there you go. So yeah, that's it for our dates. But yeah, next up here, Elden Ring, from Software and Bandai Namco are celebrating 30 million copies shipped.
Yep.
Very good job for them over the past 2 years or so that this has been out. Big deal for one of those games that I do wonder how many of the of these copies went to people that played it past like 5 hours. Because it certainly got a lot of hype in a way that I'm sure there's plenty of normies that are like, oh, what's this Elden Ring thing? I've heard a lot about this. It seems like it's supposed to be pretty good. You know, one game of the year. So
yeah,
let me check us out and like get their asses kicked in the first boss. I'm like, oh, I'm not a psycho like this. I don't know why I bought this game.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a great success for them. It'll be interesting to see how well that translates into future games. Even like the one they got coming out later this month, Night Ring.
Yeah.
Which is like more of a co-op focused spinoff. That's I think a $40 or $50 game. Curious to see if there's I've not really seen much hype out of it. That just might be nobody really knows what to expect out of it. Especially for the people that don't necessarily dip into the co-op much on these games. So yeah, but great news for From Software. Bandai Namco, who may be done publishing these games for them. From Software might have graduated to doing it themselves or with other companies like Nintendo. And all that. So yeah, we'll see how that goes, but good news. As we get into the bad news here. Because first up here, Atari, they have been selling reprints of their 2600 and 7800 games. Boutique thing. They announced this week that they are raising the prices on that by 10% because of tariffs. Which I think only essentially means that they'll probably go up from about $30 to $33. So not really a huge increase there, but certainly noticeable when even the like boutique storefront like Atari's is like having to raise prices on their cartridges. So yeah, that's unfortunate, but that seems like a fairly small if you're dead set on buying one of these games, I don't think that's a price that discourages you. You're just like, oh, that's $3 I could have had for something else, but oh well. So yeah, there you go. Thing you may not have known was being sold.
Yeah.
Is being sold, and it's going to get a little bit more expensive for the very specific audience it serves. So there you go. Let's see. Next up here, yeah, there was a development in that Apple Epic Game lawsuit. Or it seems like a judge has ruled in Epic's favor in the sense that they're saying here Apple's no longer allowed to stop developers from encouraging US-based users to make payments via alternative methods, like web transactions that circumvent its ecosystem and its payment, like Apple's own payment system, which is sort of what Epic was doing for a bit there, where they were trying to say, like, hey, you could pay this much for your V-Bucks on Fortnite on iOS, or you can click on this link to go to the web page and then pay a little bit less for the same V-Bucks. And Apple very much smacked them down on that, Because if you don't know, any sort of payments you do through apps on the App Store or through apps from the App Store and all that on Apple, they generally raise those prices to account for the 30% cut they take. So if you want to subscribe to Spotify or Netflix or whatever through your app, you were generally paying more than if you were to not do that. Go to your computer or your streaming device and subscribe through there. This judge has ruled that they are not able to prevent developers from saying, like, hey, you can go here to pay less if you want. As they say here, the court enjoins Apple from implementing its new anti-competitive acts to avoid compliance with the injunction. Immediately, Apple will no longer impede developers' ability to communicate with users, nor will they levy or impose a new commission off of off-app purchases. It seems like part of this also is because Apple basically shook off the last ruling they had on this stuff and claiming that one of their execs, the vice president of finance, Alex Roman, outright lied under oath and basically just kept doing whatever they were doing before, disregarded the court's orders.
Yep.
And all that. So they threw the book at him on this, which is not a thing that Apple probably expected. They probably just had to get a slap on the wrist and move on. But no, they got the book thrown at them, especially talking about their 30% commission for this stuff as anti-competitive. So they need to allow developers to direct users to alternative payment options and such. So that is good to see, because that stuff always seemed like a pretty shitty thing to force onto developers, especially those that do their business on multiple platforms. Such as just asking for money if you do business elsewhere, even if it's just because they clicked on a link in your app. That seems like a pretty good outcome for this.
Yep.
Good for developers all around the industry. Good to see. Apple sucks.
Yeah. Nothing really to add to that. It's just they're getting their comeuppance for once.
Yeah. And I'm sure Apple will appeal this and all that and see if they can get a better outcome for themselves. But hopefully that doesn't work for them, but we'll see. Let's see. Let's get to some more bad news here. Respawn laid off about 100 people amid adjustments and canceling two incubation projects, including one that seems to have been a Titanfall extraction shooter.
Yep.
Because every first-person shooter developer is working on some sort of extraction shooter, or has worked on that.
Yep.
Respawn seems like they were not immune to that. But it seems like this was also, I don't know, a weird announcement, because it seemed to coincide with EA themselves laying off another 200 or so people.
Yep.
Throughout their own business. And that created a whole weird story. It's like, oh, this 100 people at Respawn, that sucks. And you find, like, oh, there's like another 200 some people from EA itself throughout their whole business.
Yep.
Getting laid off. And it's like, oh, that's even worse. And it seems like a lot of probably more bureaucrat type of jobs throughout their business. But yeah. Sucks a lot.
Yeah.
See this, especially at Respawn, who has been making cool stuff, but seems like their need to make something new is coming up pretty soon. I know they're working on that strategy game, and they're probably also working on another Star Wars Jedi game. A third one in that trilogy, and maybe making a new Apex Legends. Because that seems to be running its course. So hopefully that works out for them.
Yeah, I hope so.
One of the coolest developers that EA has.
Basically saved EA's ass.
Yeah.
Like, I have to constantly remind people, The reason Respawn continues to exist is because Apex Legends saved EA's ass when they were at like the nadir of their reputation. Because, you know, this was after Star Wars Battlefront 2 had come out and just all the awful, awful microtransactions and just overall cruddy presentation. And then Respawn comes in with Apex Legends. Nobody expected to take it off, to take off the way it did. And it just took off and it made EA, it managed to save EA from going into the red. So, you know.
Yeah. Does seem like that wasn't the end of bad news for EA.
No.
As it seems like they have put a pause on Codemasters World Rally Championship games. I think they made their first one here a year or so ago. And that seems like that has not done well. So EA has put a pause on that. And likely that is the end of their sort of rally games in general. So that might mean that F1 is kind of their game for the time being.
Yep.
From what I've heard, their games in recent, you know, like the last 5 years or so have not been really selling all that well, which is not really a huge surprise. But most of the games are pretty good, at least. Seems like diminishing returns on a lot of that stuff. And that's probably why they became an acquisition target for like 2K and EA, with EA being the one that got the rights to purchase them. And led to this kind of point where it seems like the World Rally Championship game just did not sell very well to justify, you know, paying for the license, for the World Rally Championship license and all that. So yeah, they're stopping work on that game and probably focusing on F1 for the time being. So maybe something else comes along for them. But yeah, I don't know if there's any layoffs tied to this, but that may end up being the case. Yeah, there's doesn't seem like there's any news at that, but that may end up happening at some point. But yeah, just kind of focusing on the F1 game that seems like it does very well for them. It's a sport that is on the up and up, but with a lot of shitty aspects to it because it cozy up to a lot of the petrol state countries. And so all the ickiness that comes out of that ends up being an issue as well. Even down to, you know, I think they stopped doing races in Russia when that whole war on Ukraine started. But they still do like Qatar and Saudi Arabia and all that. So that's fun. But yeah, there you go. Some sad news for Codemasters, so I'm sure they'll do good work on the F1 game that got coming out pretty soon. But let's see what else we got here. ZeniMax, their CWA unions. At least the QA unions have been expressing some frustration with Microsoft for essentially refusing to come to the table for good faith negotiations for a new deal. We talked about recently they authorized a strike. Should that come to it? Do things get to that point? But they've certainly been talking a bit here. Saying, it's become increasingly clear that although Microsoft tries to position itself as a good faith employer, there's another story being told behind the scenes at the bargaining table. We are frustrated. Our union will continue fighting until we secure a contract, and we're prepared to do whatever it takes, even if that means withholding our labor. Because, yeah, it's been about 3 years since they entered into a labor neutrality agreement with CWA to please freely and fairly make a choice about union representation. Though they pledged to give employees a seat at the table, they have been repeatedly accused of failing to engage in productive negotiations with those who've chosen to organize, and it's not a huge surprise.
Yeah.
Microsoft's not exactly been a union positive company before, mm-hmm. and certainly letting people form unions is very cool for them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they let them actually negotiate deals and such is another thing altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that talk with the Activision Blizzard acquisition certainly seemed to be talk.
Yeah.
Especially now that the Trump administration is in power and there's less interest in their administration trying to keep unions happy in this instance.
Yeah.
Considering that was a big acquisition during the Biden administration.
Yeah.
And Lena Khan and all that, and she's not around to help anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is something that's probably going to go Microsoft's way, as you would expect.
Yeah.
Hope these people are able to continue to fight for their rights to get a better deal
mm-hmm.
and actually get it, but I'm not sure I give Microsoft much of a chance of actually doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks, but you know, they shouldn't give up. Just might have to do a change in tactics here and there, but they really need to keep up the struggle and the pressure, because he won't be president forever.
Yeah. So I'm sure Microsoft would love to get these people replaced with AI.
Mm-hmm.
Just have AI QA all their stuff.
Mm.
You know, Starfield was bug free. Now, wait till the AI takes over.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. We got two more stories here, both kind of similar sides of the same coin in the way that gaming media has been tossed aside of late. The big sites that give people hope in good paying jobs in this mm-hmm. part of the industry have taken two big hits. Mm-hmm. First up here, Polygon has been sold by Vox Media to Valnet,
mm-hmm.
As well as the majority of their staff being laid off in the process. If you don't know Valnet, they're the sort of group that has a bunch of websites, notably things like, I think, Comic Book Resources,
mm-hmm.
The Gamer, Collider.
Yeah.
Screen Rant, Game Rant, a bunch mm-hmm. of other stuff that, let's say they're the kind of sites that are fully designed around SEO.
Yeah.
Those kind of articles that you'll see pop up whenever you're doing searches for things. And it's like, mm-hmm. oh, this answers the question I have. And you scroll through a bunch of ads and, you know, crappy text that doesn't answer anything to maybe find the answer at the very end.
Yeah.
Unless you've given them a bunch of impressions on ads and such.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made money, a decent chunk of money off of your one view.
Yep.
That kind of thing. It seems like they're going to probably do something similar with Polygon.
Probably.
Which is a shame, because they've had a lot of great people work for them over the mm-hmm. years, especially even right now with the number of people that you might recognize from other sites, like Matt Leone, mm-hmm. one of the bigger names from 1UP when they shut down,
mm-hmm.
Just been working over at Polygon for the last 10, 15 years, however long that's mm-hmm. been, doing a lot of good feature work and such. Chris Grant is left as well, who is their one of their co-founders and all that. And yeah, it's just sad to see.
Mm-hmm.
Vox Media just kind of throwing in the towel on this group and saying like, hey, screw it, we can make some money. That's all that matters is money.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a sad thing to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, not really. It's just sad.
Yep.
Really. And
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I had nothing else to add.
Yeah, I was going to say, on the other side, Giant Bomb had a big shakeup. Seemed like over the last couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
it had gotten word down from fandom about stopping streams entirely,
mm-hmm.
Which is a weird thing to do, but seems like somebody took over this portion of the fandom business and has had a number of interesting mandates for what they want out of Giant Bomb, essentially confirming that they don't know what they have in Giant Bomb. The crew there that was there at the end, Dan Reichert, Jeff Grubb, Jan Ochoa, Mike Minotti, and a handful of others have done a good job building something new and interesting after Jeff Gerstmann, Alex Navarro, Vinnie Caravelle, and Brad Shoemaker left. And building up something pretty cool there that ended up with Dan Riker doing a very late stream, I think on Sunday night. I don't know. I don't think it was it might have been Saturday or Sunday night, but basically him kind of getting drunk and ranting about the frustration over this recent brand strategy thing they got sent that essentially amounted to being a PG-13 site and all that. They kind of went through the whole email on the last Giant Bomb cast, which then pretty quickly after it went out, the whole thing got pulled from all the RSS feeds. You could check, I don't know where you would want to check, but probably archive.org or somewhere else has links to a download of that podcast if you want to see it or listen to it. Is there much would you kind of expect there where they're kind of mocking the poor decision of making all these changes that's going to go against the way Giant Bomb really should be run as a personality-based website? And the way that, you know, those people know how to work. Instead of trying to be like a kid-friendly kind of thing, it's like, and that's not really the site that they are. They've never been that. They've very much been anti-corporation in a way, where in spite of whatever corporations have owned them over the years, or whoever it's been, they've been kind of able to do what they need and kind of act independently of that organization. But fandom seemed to be the one that was able to piss off enough of those people that they either quit or were fired from the jobs. So yeah, Dan Reichert's no longer there. Jeff Grubb no longer there. Mike Minotti worked at GamesBeats, which just recently sort of bought out their own independence from VentureBeat. So he's basically going to be continuing to work there full-time instead of working on Giant Bomb stuff. I'm sure these guys will find some means of working together. Seems like there's potentially a group account that they have on a couple of places. That's probably when things work out right, so they'll announce themselves to do kind of what they were doing, but as a their own entity. We'll see if that ends up being the case. I'm not going to mention the name just in case that people's assumptions were wrong on that, but yeah, it seems like a few people are staying, probably to work on the GameSpot side of things. I don't think anybody should be antagonistic about that, because considering the landscape of the games media world, taking a steady job is important, especially if you have a family to keep in as good a shape as you can as we're heading into a recession here. Not like good times are ahead for everybody. And probably the dumbest thing they did, fandom did, is that they had one of their people take over the social media accounts for Giant Bomb and post a message that says here, "We understand your frustration, appreciate your patience, M-dash. We are actively exploring creative directions for the future of GB and look forward to sharing more with you soon." To which former employee Alex Navarro said, "Making someone get out there and do the Muhammad Saeed El-Sahaf thing for the brand in the middle of all this is cruel even by most corporate standards." Yeah, he says here, "What are you going to do? What are you exploring? What do you think it is you own, and what do you left of it unless you can plainly, honestly answer those questions to an audience. Why are you talking at all? This is like the day of everything starts falling apart for Giant Bomb. Then I think the same person went onto the forums, which is like, oh, buddy, you just stepped into a beehive here and said, I'm going to shake you up. So, that was a bad move to go into their forums to be like, hey, things are going to be okay, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so many of those posts are just fuck you. So, yeah. They really didn't know what they had with Giant Bomb. They seemed like they tried to bring in new people. Good luck with that. I imagine when you really lose the personalities, because there's been generally some people still staying there when they've had change, that has helped rebuild things into a good place for Giant Bomb. But this kind of shakeup is not one that's going to be well received.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the near future, considering the way people were reacting to the good stuff they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also came out that like Fandom was pocketing all of the Giant Bomb premium subscription money versus sharing it with the people that made people feel that was worth the price.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also pretty shitty. So they've been asking people like, don't renew your subscriptions, make sure you cancel the renewals and all that, so you don't get charged to essentially make the execs at Fandom feel like this was a good move.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just a shitty situation all around. Yeah, I don't know if you have anything else to add.
Nope. Just again, it's just another sign of how the continuing consolidation of all media into a small group of monopolies and essentially just late stage capitalism. What else can I say?
Yeah. Having all these games media websites essentially being increased by a select few amount of companies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is not going to be the way that you want it to be if you want people to, give you fair and honest opinions on games and news and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Especially without, them being presented in like a YouTube or Twitch stream style hot take machine to get as much views and looks as you can. That is a lot of the way that influencers and such get their attention.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as we're seeing a lot of people doing the Gamergate thing and all that, trying to farm attention from people with the most vapid and stupid takes they can. Just a sad time in the games media. So yeah, I don't know really where else to go from there, but yeah, I think it's going to end the show on a big bummer, but it has been a big bummer this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's not been a ton of great things to hang our hat on for anything here.
No, not really.
So yeah, that is a wanted to do it for the show this week. Thank you, Brandon, for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news, especially in May.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of see a lot of new and interesting stuff coming out.
Yep.
For this week, let's see. There's Captain Blood that's out this week on Tuesday. Mm-hmm.
That's one of those games that's been like a decades in the making.
Yeah. There's Metal Eden. It's also out on the 6th. On the 8th, it's Midnight Walk, which is that neat-looking sort of horror or dark fantasy first-person adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
Anything for PS5, PSVR, and PC. Revenge of the Savage Planet also coming out this week. So a decent amount of stuff here. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also depressed by the news with regards to the games media.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.